Sooner or later, every horror franchise attempts to get away from its central killer and go in a new direction. This never works. Want to find out why? Then watch Friday the 13th, A New Beginning, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two witches who would demand better than Jack Nicholson if they're conjuring someone up, I think.
Amen.
Camila Adams.
Yes, I most definitely would.
And Robin Hitchcock.
You would not have that little ponytail situation.
Oh, sweet fancy Moses.
We did not even get, like, I know that was a thing at the time, kind of, but like, not if you were mostly bald,
I
right?
Don't think
like,
so.
Or 50, you know, like, there was so much to talk about with Witches of Eastwick, we couldn't even get to questionable ponytails.
I know, even though it was just always on my mind. Every time he was on screen, it was just like screaming at me. It's like, tiny, tiny ponytail, tiny ponytail.
And you'd forget, and then he'd turn your head. Right. It was like, ah! Like, that was the only jump scare when you remembered the ponytail was there.
Exactly.
Oh, but it's what a spooky season it has been. From the joys of Halloween to the confusion of the nun, to the laughter of Witches of Eastwick. And now this shit, here we are. It's great. No, it's good. I'm glad to talk about Jason, but...
I guess we've covered all, like, we've kind of touched on every aspect of horror. in this month, in the spooky season.
We still got to get Freddy. That's our missing piece.
I'm just meaning like thematically, I guess.
Oh, yeah, so, for yeah. Sure. Yeah, we really did.
Hey, we dodged all of the found footage bullets.
Oh, that's right.
We still never landed on a paranormal activity or anything. I was spending some time with the list this weekend. There are so many animated or CGI hybrid all ages. There's like three Hotel Transylvanias and two Goosebumps and all of that on this, and I don't want to watch any of that, and we haven't, which is great.
I'm so happy we didn't land on
salt over your shoulder.
Right, yeah. I'm glad we didn't land on a Transylvania, Hotel Transylvania.
We're allowed to draw those otherwise. We're going to get Goosebumps too next week.
Right,
right.
I'm glad to get to the Friday the 13th franchise.
I'm wearing my shirt today.
This year.
Oh, cool.
Hey, look at that. That is a good one. We've got a Friday the 13th wreath on our front door. Yes. Right now. It's just a wooden bloody life preserver with Jason's mask on it and says Camp Crystal Lake. It's great. I have a banner right here that I didn't even remember I had right next to me as were recording.
A Camp Crystal Lake banner.
I have swag. I don't actually think any of these movies are all that great, but I love them anyway. So we know where Camila and I stand.
Don't let the shirt fool you. I got this shirt in like a loot crate or something. So it wasn't a purposeful purchase. And I think I've only ever seen the first Friday the 13th. I don't think I've seen any other ones.
Same.
And other than this glorious piece of cinematic.
I think
glory.
I've seen all of them now because we went through the first nine earlier during the pandemic, and I know I saw Jason X and Freddy vs. Jason in the theater. I distinctly remember seeing the reboot. So yeah, I've seen every one of these things. And we happen to land on maybe the worst one. Okay. I don't know. It has contenders for being the worst one, but it's way down there.
There are Friday the 13th worse than this one? Like, is it just a sock puppet show? Because I mean,
maybe.
Frankly, I feel like there's a decent chance of a sock puppet show being better than this movie.
True. That wasn't fair to sock puppets.
Jason Takes Manhattan is really bad, largely in that it takes 80% of the movie before he gets to Manhattan. Like, if he had been in New York the whole time, I would have been like, great, good, this is fun. But no, he spends most of it on, like, a low-rent cruise ship because some kids are sailing from to Manhattan for their school trip. Most of the mayhem is on, like, hey, that guy said we could tape on the cruise ship for a week. That's most of the movie. It's really bad. Yeah, this might be the worst of them.
Huh.
Partially because you saw the banner and the wreath. You know what's really vital to these is camp.
Yes.
And no camp to be found in part five.
You mean literal camp, not like
outdoor mental institute?
Not like Cher in burlesque camp.
Exactly.
Both are fine. I meant a literal physical camp, a place with counselors and children fleeing from that works. That helps. Right. Not present here.
That makes a story. That has me a little invested. And I don't know what the hell this was supposed to be. This is like a halfway house that was on a campsite.
Right. That's the thing is that they had this opportunity to make it at least kind of similar to camp.
Right.
But they don't.
Now,
let's talk about what does happen.
Ah, yes.
Robin.
Oh, boy.
Robin, who does not like this genre and is the only one on the show who's not something of a big time horror fan, got to do two different recaps in Spooky Month. So to give you the plot of Friday the 13th, A New Beginning, a.k.a. Friday the 13th, Part 5, a.k.a. Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning, depending on which poster you're looking at. Here's Robin Hitchcock with a 60-second recap, and go.
We open with Corey Feldman observing some fools digging up Jason's grave. He was buried with his machete, and he's obviously not really dead, so he kills them. Jason looks like he's about to kill Corey, but I guess he didn't, because flash forward to a grownish version of the same character who's named Tommy, alive and deposited at a home for wayward teens. One of the wayward teens axe murders another. There's a paramedic that's rude and another that's disturbed. Then there is a series of Altman-esque unrelated vignettes of people in town engaging in various forms of vice, including sloppy eating and meadow sex. They all get macheted. Tommy, ostensibly the main character, disappears for long stretches of the time but does fit in a fist fight. Bingo. There's a plucky child and a lady named Pam. They do some final girl shenanigans. Eventually the person who we think is Jason gets impaled, but he's not Jason, he's a paramedic. I didn't know that. Anyway, Tommy also decides to become Jason. Too many Jasons.
Congratulations.
Perfect.
<Yes. laughs> I did it again.
That's the movie.
It's really part nine that's too many Jasons, because the conceit of part nine is that even if you do kill Jason, his black heart will transfer to the nearest person.
Stop it.
So then there's
Stop
just,
it.
Yeah, then there's just randos wandering around killing in Jason-style ways.
I actually thought that was going to be the plot of this one, when the one kid axe murders the other.
Yeah.
No.
That's what I didn't. I mean, I didn't even think it was going to be like that deep, because that's what you're talking, like some old Buffy stuff where she activates all of the potential slayers. But this is like
all the potential Jasons.
Right. Get activated. I just thought that Vic or whoever it was doing the killing all along, because did we find out what happened to him? Did he get arrested?
Good question.
Yeah, he went to jail, and that was the end of it.
Okay.
When we got to this one, watching it casually, we got to the end, and they're like, oh my god, it was that guy? And we were like,
who?
Well, who the fuck is that guy?
Right.
And immediately rewound to the scene that guy was in to go, oh, okay. That's seems like an outsized reaction, but all right, fine. It was that minor character.
Right.
But why is the thing? Why? Was he like, so, oh, that axe murdering looks fun?
It's because the dude that the slow boy that was killed was his son that he had abandoned a billion years ago. And now that set off something and it broke his brain. And so
Wait a second. I missed that entirely.
Yes, right. Let's sit on that for a little bit and then we'll go to the facts.
It's barely in there. Okay. One of this movie's 12 inciting incidents is at this halfway house, there's a goofy, kind of good-for-nothing doofus who always has chocolate on his face. And he wanders around asking people to be nice to him.
Right.
It's sad when you get right down to it. He picks the wrong guy. He picks this like simmering rage type who's chopping wood with an axe and gives this guy the mildest amount of guff. And wood chopping man kills him with the axe.
So basically, today was not that was not his day. Like, dude, right, dude had right. had enough already.
Right. So he kills this doofus kid. The paramedics show up. One of the paramedics just happens to be the long lost father of the doofus kid.
Now, do they say that in that scene?
No.
It's like, look at this dead person who's your son.
No. So it was just like, there was all that weirdness. Cause like you said, the rude paramedic was like, come get your hands dirty. And then there's like a really weird scene where like dude's crotch is in his face. And then we just get like screen full of butt, but then like he's acting all weird.
Watching it, knowing that this guy was eventually going to be revealed as the killer, there's like a couple extra shots of him reacting. There are a few more extra shots of him going, oh shit, when he sees the body than you would expect of a side character. Right. And that's all you get. And then at the very end, after this guy, Roy, the long lost father, has been killed, there's like a 45 second explanation in the hospital of, turns out Roy, turns out Doofus was the kid Roy abandoned. I guess that seeing his son slaughtered made him snap.
Decide to become Jason?
Yes. I mean, to be fair, this was not the original plot of this movie.
Okay.
Let's
figure out what
just really quickly, if we can.
Yeah. Please.
Because I have now seen two of these movies, neither of which involve actual Jason.
The two that don't, come to think of it.
Is he like a supernatural being along the lines of Michael Myers? Like, when they dig his grave up, I mean, like, obviously he's not dead, but why isn't he dead?
That's a dream sequence.
That's a, wait.
Yeah, what? It's a dream sequence because he, like, wakes up on the bus or whatever.
None of that's real.
No.
I thought that was a memory. Let's go back.
See, this is what happened. I asked Robin on Saturday, do you want me to tell you what happens in the Friday the 13th series? And you said no, which, fine. You wanted to go in cold?
I thought it would be fun and interesting.
You were wrong.
Oh, it's just confusing. So and I said, all right, I'm sending you an email in case you're so baffled that you're like, what the is even happening? What that email said was, in Friday the 13th, part 4, Jason is presumably killed by a young Tommy Jarvis played by Corey Feldman. At the end of that movie, Corey Feldman kills Jason. And this movie flashes forward 7 years where Tommy is basically suffering extreme PTSD over having killed a monster when he was 12. So that opening sequence is a dream, a nightmare about Jason coming back that Tommy Jarvis is having.
Okay, because to be fair, I did read your email after I watched the beginning of the movie.
It didn't help.
And I still interpreted that as a memory of the end, or possibly a Halloween 2 situation where they were replaying part of the end of Friday the 13th, part 4, the final chapter. Isn't that what it's called?
Yes.
I love when things chapter. Are the final chapter.
Oh, but it's not. A new beginning.
I'll skip ahead a little bit. 2, 3, and 4 were all supposed to be the last movie. And then they thought, yeah, we could have more money, though. So the plan was, okay, we're going to keep going with Tommy Jarvis as the new Jason.
Good
because
Lord.
When Tommy when Tommy kills Jason at the end of part 4, he goes a little wacky and is like really into it, and the last shot of part 4 is Tommy staring at the camera like I'm crazy now. And what they really wanted to do with this movie part 5 was get Corey Feldman back still as a child and have him like slowly transitioning into becoming the new Jason. But they couldn't get Corey Feldman other than to do a quick dream sequence. And we're like, okay, fine. We'll skip ahead. We'll hire someone else to be Tommy. And he's going to be the Jason after this movie. This movie will have a misdirect. This movie, it'll just be this random Roy guy. But after this, it's going to be Tommy's the new Jason. This movie didn't do well. They said, fuck it. And part 6 is just called Jason Lives. And he just survived somehow.
Okay.
Yeah, I am never going to revisit this madness again. Unless, of course, it comes up. I'm sure all the rest of them are on this fucking list.
I can only pray that it does. if you didn't follow any of that, here's some of it again. Friday the 13th, A New Beginning, was released March 22nd, 1985. It was only the third number one film of that year because most of the year until that point had been Beverly Hills Cop. in the number one spot. In fact, Friday the 13th, A New Beginning is the film that permanently removed Beverly Hills Cop from the top of the charts. Won its opening weekend with $8 million over three new releases. Porky's Revenge was in second with $6.2 million. The Last Dragon came out that weekend, debuted in fourth with $5.2 million. And Baby, Secret of the Lost Legend in fifth with $4 million. I had definitely never heard of that movie.
What is it?
Baby. Is this Dirty Dancing Baby. Part 2?
It turns out she was some kind of banshee. It gets all mystical. It's the lost legend of Baby. No, this is one of those. This is one of those Disney live action things that no one noticed, where a family goes to Africa and finds a living dinosaur, and then they have to get the living dinosaur out to protect it from, I don't know.
Was the dinosaur like a little animatronic thing?
I think so, yeah.
This sounds amazing.
The light that lit up in Robin's eyeballs.
Before the end of the episode, we'll figure out if this is on Disney Plus right now.
Right.
And Robin will have her plans for the evening. Right. A New Beginning fell to third the following weekend, only was in the theaters for 4 weeks, going on to gross $21.9 million, only the 41st highest grossing film of that year, beginning a box office decline that would not stop until Freddy showed up in the 11th film. In short, the Friday the 13th that became big hits were the original, Part 3, which is the one in 3D, and Part 4, all of which made between $30 and $40 million. Those are the ones that really worked. This was the first one that tried to go in a new direction, as we mentioned, and thus dropped more than $10 million from its predecessor. It made more than $10 million less than Part 4, leading to an endless cycle of rebooting and changing and trying new things that would never work, bottoming out with a $13.1 million total gross for Jason X. Jason X, despite being like a little remembered because it's the one in space, is the worst performing in the series and only made $13 million. It's also the only one to lose money because these are usually very cheap. Jason X cost $14 million. And then Freddy vs. Jason and the reboot in 2009 were very big hits. The failure hardly matters, though, because these movies are so cheap to make. This movie, A New Beginning, had a budget of $12 million. Pretty much.
Yeah, right? Where did that money go? Was this like a drug money laundering situation?
I mean, they had to rent a diner, you know. The production value in Tommy's Dream was fairly high. Especially, that was just his backyard. I'm skipping ahead in my own faxy list. The reason they couldn't get Corey Feldman to come back for this movie is because he was shooting Goonies at the time. Like, yeah, probably even Corey Feldman had better things to do. But he was shooting Goonies at the same time. They only got him on his one, like he had Saturdays off from Goonies. So he agreed to give that Saturday to this movie and they set up that set in his family's backyard.
Oh, wow.
That had to be $500,000, you know, all of that equipment taken to some, you know, cul-de-sac in Ventura or whatever.
Some snot-nosed kid's house.
Right. So $2.2 million. So even with not really making a lot of money, this movie made 10 times its budget. If you can do that, keep making movies. None of them, until Jason X, cost more than $5 million to make. The most expensive ever is the remake, and even that only cost $25 million to make. They're free money. None were more profitable than the original, though. The original made $39 million domestically, another $20 million globally, against a budget of $550,000.
Wow.
So some people got rich. Probably not the actors. You probably got like $4,000 and a sandwich to be in one
of these movies. But, I don't even think these people have told anybody that they're in this movie.
One of the women in this movie actually lost work later on. Like, she gave up and became, I think, a teacher. And then the students found her extensive nude scene in Friday the 13th, Part 5, and she got fired over it. It's...
Wow!
It is a shame.
That's not okay.
A note on the series timeline. Unlike Halloween, all of these movies theoretically occur in the same continuous plot.
At least there's that.
Yeah, albeit with a few rounds of, Jason's back and we're not going to tell you why or how. Because we did kill him. Right.
Do they happen on Friday the 13th?
That's a very good question.
Several? Certainly the original and a few others.
Okay.
at some point, they didn't notice that multiple movies had like a 5 to 7 years later jump, just like no one started keeping track. And so these movies all take place in the near future for no reason other than logically they would have to. Canonically, this movie, which was released in 1985, must take place in 1990, given how far after the previous film it was. By the time we get to Friday the 13th, The New Blood, released in 1988, must take place in 2001. Because they've just skipped so many years.
Oh my god.
Till they tied it around with Jason X taking place in 2455 because space. Finally, a note as to why we have not been blessed with more Jason. Basically, the series has been in both development hell and rights hell for more than a decade. Someone will come in with an idea for another one of these. It'll get kicked around for a while. During the time when it gets kicked around, the rights revert to a previous holder, and then there's a legal battle over who owns Jason. There has not been a Friday the 13th since 2009, the reboot, which was kind of a standalone thing, making it the longest gap between Jason movies since the series began. That is good or bad news, depending on your perspective. So, Robin, this is all new to you. What do you think?
She looks so bewildered. Like, what the?
I'm speechless. The thing about this movie that I found the most remarkable was how much of it is really just, look at these two characters you know nothing about, have a conversation, soon they'll be murdered.
Right. There was a whole ass camp or whatever of characters that we've already established, but yet we want to keep introducing brand new people just to be killed, extensively introducing them,
like just over and over again. And some of them are a little more charming than others, and so like I kind of liked the part with Reggie's brother.
Oh,
right. And yeah, his girlfriend. And like, that was definitely the peak of the film for me, partially because Reggie was an actual character and he was involved.
Right.
And I guess Pam was there too. But when Pam showed up and sort of remained in the rest of the film, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess you were in the beginning. Like, it was like, okay. Oh, you're going to be in the movie more than Tommy now.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
That's actually my biggest objection to this movie, among many, is that it's supposed to be really easy to like create a set number of characters and introduce them, even if you're going to keep vignetting over to all of these other people so you can also kill them. Even if you're doing that, it should be pretty easy to establish who everyone at the halfway house is. And yet at one point, we're left with the relatively nice redhead,
Robin,
the guy who stutters, Reggie, and
Violet,
the gothish chick.
Yeah.
And like, there's a long shot of them, like it's down to them, and it's like, yeah, we don't know them, like.
And also they just swiftly get murdered.
I thought that one of them would make it out, but
here's the other thing,
maybe
about
Reggie
this.
Did Reggie live? Reggie lived.
Yeah. I'm confused as to, I'm looking at on IMDb and I'm confused as to why Reggie is like 27th down the list of cast members here. But yeah, Reggie does live.
That makes sense, because he's a child.
Right. What were you about to ask, Robin?
Okay, this may be a very naive question. A lot of the kills in this movie are people getting stabbed point first with a machete. If I was going to attack someone with a machete, which I have no intention of ever doing, I would do more of a hack and slash kind of motion.
Right.
What is the proper use of a machete for killing someone?
I would imagine it's a hack and slash kind of thing. Like, imagine you're like chopping down plants or something. Like,
that's exactly what I'm thinking. But there's a lot of running people through with the machete instead.
I was also like, yeah, why don't we ever see Jason doing the actual killing? He's wearing a mask, so it's not like, oh, like, because I know with the whole, oh, it turned out it's Roy at the end, but it's like, Jason's not actually on screen. He's on screen for Tommy's dream and then like the last 20 minutes. Like, everything else is just his hand and machete. It's like,
right.
I think they're meaninglessly following the format of the original movie. Because in the original movie, it's not clear who's doing the killing. And it's not Jason. Jason's a kid who drowned. Like, right. It turns out to be Mrs. Voorhees. And so I think because the original had characters getting killed by this off-screen presence, they're like, Well, that's what these movies do, even though we clearly know who it is at this point.
Oh, it
doesn't make sense. I'm just saying.
Your explanation of it makes sense. The existence of it does not.
But one thing Colin said, which I will repeat, is that if somebody told me that they made this movie as some kind of generic slasher movie and then later got the rights to Jason and added a few extra shots of a guy in a hockey mask, I'd believe that.
Right? I would totally get that.
It's so generic and specific at the same time. Like, there literally nothing occurs in this movie that I haven't seen 10 times before, but so many, like, they go to such detail to, like, we're going to spend 5 detailed minutes with this hillbilly woman and her son and, like, really make you feel that, even though they have no bearing on anything and are just here to add to the body count, which, right, by the way, my least favorite horror trope is sloppy hillbillies. I don't mean violent hillbillies, like the family in Texas Chainsaw. That's fine. That's a little bit different. But when it's just like, these dumb goofballs are here to act annoying for 4 minutes before they get killed, it just bothers me so much for some reason.
It's useless.
Again, with the sloppy eating, hillbilly son has like a full plate of corn chowder spread across his face for no clear reason.
I think I'm most annoyed with this. There are a lot of things in this film that bothered me. But like, I'm rooting for Jason at this point. Like, all of these characters like suck hard. And I'm like, I'm rooting for him. Like, please hurry up and come kill these people. And I was like, am I supposed to be rooting for him? But I start to think, like, you know, as many horror films that I enjoy, I don't, you know, and I love like the Saw franchise, as I've said time and time again, I even enjoy Jigsaw as the killer, quote unquote, but it's like, I don't ever find myself rooting for him per se. It's never like, yeah, get him, Jigsaw. It's always just like, you know, I'm enjoying what's happening around it. And Jason is like a really boring killer. He's just very boring. Yeah. Like, he's a showman. Like, he comes out.
Right.
But, like, Michael Myers is similar to Jason in that he doesn't talk and he doesn't really have motivation. He just goes around killing people. I am more afraid of Michael Myers.
Right.
I don't know why.
Same.
I mean, Jason is really unintimidating in this movie. And I think it's partially because that's not Jason. Like, I think that's part of it here. So it's motivated. It's just bad. Like,
just because some rando paramedic just decided he wanted to do something.
Right.
Because his son got murdered.
Which he abandoned.
He abandoned. Like, what?
There was no point in that being the plot of this movie. Was there an actual script, like with dialogue?
Right, it feels like a bad improv set.
And while we're at it, I watched the edited version, edited for television. Was all the actual acting in the unedited version? Because what I saw.
No. However, the woman who I assume is the woman who got fired from her teaching job, Meadow Sex Lady, does have very nice boobs.
And boy, do we spend a lot of time with them. There's 4 extra shots that are just there to be like, listen, we don't need this shot, but even we're surprised at how nice her boobs are, so we're going to link. Although that scene, first of all, if you're sneaking off from a facility that I'm sure you're not supposed to sneak off from to have sex, one, don't start with like a weird gibbering tickle fight in the backyard that like just makes your plans very obvious. And then they have sex very briefly. And he says, I'm going to go wash up. What wash up? Where? You just had sex in the woods.
Right.
Where are you going?
You were in like dirt.
All the more reason to wash up.
But it's like, but where are you washing up in? Like, you've got dirt and shit up in crevices you're not supposed to. And you're going to go in this filthy ass pond. I'm assuming
that is a good point. If he washed up in a shower, I'd be more on board.
Right.
He was like, I'm definitely going to go into this scummy water.
Right. And get some penis fish floats up his urethra. At that point, Jason is the least of his worries. So, but you're right. Their sexual encounter was like 2 minutes and they're both like afterwards.
She lies back so satisfied. And I'm like, I don't think she is, though. I didn't see anything there that would put her in a gazing up at the cloud state of bliss.
No.
I kind of, Okay. If this were more self-aware, like that's one of the only, that's the saving grace by the time the series gets a little bit further on, is it starts to like get what it is and play with it a little bit more. If this were a little self-aware and it were just, here's two characters and we've written a scene for them and they're dead. Here's two more characters we've written the scene for them and they're dead. And it didn't have all of these like narrative problems around that, I would like it more. All of the individual vignettes are kind of fine. I like when Mustache Guy goes to the diner because he really goes for that in that in his I'm doing coke and enjoying it scene.
It feels like the beginning
like,
of a...
Let me think of every street name for coke possible and I will say them all.
Right. It felt like the beginning of like a ZZ Top video or something. Like, and the other video with, was it Pete and Vinny?
Those the cops? No, the guys whose cars break down.
Yeah, who look like they were on their way to like some sort of sadomasochist party or something.
Yeah, they are getting ready for some hardcore sex somewhere.
That hat.
Maybe I'm a meadow.
Like, so clearly, Rebel Without a Cause here. Like, nobody was wearing the fucking hats in 85.
That scene gets a bonus point on my score for the fact that someone wrote, edited, and then asked an actor to deliver the line, crap my ass! Like, those three words together, I'm like, man. And you found a way. He said, I'm going to go take a crap. Crap my ass! Like, yeah, you found a way to make someone say those three words. I'm impressed.
It is interesting that in two of the vignettes, a character's like, I need to poop, and walks away.
Right. And I should note, I then took away 3 points for a getting killed while pooping scene. I don't know why. That's a very specific pet peeve. If someone dies on the toilet, it just makes me unhappy. It happens in Unforgiven, too. This is not the only time.
Scream, too.
Right. Well, he was in the stall. He was not in the act of using the restroom.
Scream 2?
In the beginning.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, I just remember he's in a bathroom stall and he gets stabbed through the stall wall.
Which gives me so many questions.
He just came in to pee. He heard what he thought was people having sex in a stall.
Because he's
the biggest creeper, went into the adjoining stall to listen to them have sex and then got stabbed in the head for it. At which point it's like, all you had to do was go, huh, somebody's having sex with her, and walk back out, and you'd be alive today, Omar Epps. But no.
Oh, right.
But there's
Omar
also, like, the whole thing of, like, how did he even know, how did the killer know that he would do that? Like, and that he would be coming to the bathroom at that moment.
Listen.
I love
the
Scream.
The Scream series is good at so many things.
Right.
Justifying why a person is standing in just the right place to die is not one of them.
I know. Every time I watch it, I'm just like, but. Yet it doesn't stop me from diving into that series.
One of my issues with, and I don't, I hate this movie, but not as much as, I was about to say I don't hate this movie. That's not true.
Okay.
I don't hate this movie as much as I might. One of my issues with it, I feel like they went out of their way to make sure there were no likable characters. Like the closest
thing. Reggie's likable.
Reggie's fine.
But he's a plucky child. He's not like a real character.
But he makes it all the way through.
Like they could have given Pam more to do to like make her like justify her as the good one before, but they didn't. And I thought that Robin was going to be the good one. I like that actress a lot. Her name's Juliette Cummings. She's like a very minor scream queen. She was in this and Psycho 3 and Slumber Party Massacre 2, which sounds like a ridiculous movie and is legitimately so much fun. I can't say enough about Slumber Party Massacre 2, but I thought she was going to be likable, and then she laughs at the poor stuttering guy. I know that, like, that come on was a little inappropriate, and he said, instead of asking her out on a date, he said, I want to make love to you, which does warrant shutting him down quickly. But she just, like, cackles at him, and it's like, oh, I thought you were going to be the nice one.
No. These characters were all terrible people. And, you know... I just can't. I only imagine that just these actors were not given anything to work with. Mm-hmm. And I guess the old man, Reggie's granddad, he was all right. Yeah.
Yeah. Did he get killed?
I just stopped seeing him after a while.
Oh. Yeah.
It's like, I assume. Like, when we stopped seeing characters, I assumed they were dead.
Yeah, but Tommy keeps coming
right.
back.
And it was like, when he showed up again, like, the last 20 minutes or so, I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy was here.
Except for the point where the movie forgets him and admits it. Like, they're off. Pam and Tommy leave for some reason. I think it's some reason involving the hillbillies. Or maybe they're going to look for the couple that got killed. I don't know. Pam and Tommy leave. Tommy wanders off.
They went with Reggie?
Yeah. That's when they went with Reggie.
Right.
And Tommy wanders off. Pam drives Reggie back. And I think Robin asks him, hey, where's Tommy? And Pam's like, yeah, I forgot him. Like, right. There's no reason why they came back.
Fight. It's Tommy yes. beats that guy up.
Right. The hillbilly.
And then he's like, I'm mad, and storms off.
Yeah, but she just like, she leaves him. Like, her and Reggie peace out. And then you're right. They come back to camp and they're like, and everybody's like, where's so-and-so? To her, who the woman who's just now comes back. And they're asking her like where everybody is. Like, I just rolled up. Like, I don't know what you guys are doing over here.
Also, I guess that's a good point. I was thinking at first, I'm like, listen, if some guy who I was driving around with got in a random fist fight and wandered off, I might be like, I'm going home. But it's like literally her job right. to care for these people.
This is her ward. Like,
So yeah, she just drops that ball.
She's like, nope, not today. Not my problem.
I am off the clock.
4 o'clock. You're on your own, Tommy.
Slide down the dinosaur tail. Refuse to help the children.
Camila, for, you know, as we said, you're a horror person. You had seen the original, which doesn't have Jason. For being around, I mean, Jason, it's like Frankenstein, Dracula, Jason at this point. He's an archetype. For having not seen any of these, this what you thought you were getting?
About-ish, but not to this level of fucktasticness. Like, this is... this is some real dumb shit. Like, I wasn't expecting, cinematic genius or anything like that, but shit, I was expecting like a coherent plot line at the very least, or like something that I was expecting a camp Crystal Lake, perhaps. I don't know. But I was also expecting Jason. So, I mean, there were a lot of expectations. Like, my bar was really low, y'all. Like, it was real low. And it just disappointed every 5 minutes, just going down and further downhill. Oh, and it was at one point I'm like, were movies really this bad in 1985? Like,
some of them were good.
Yes. It's like, I know for a fact there were good movies in 85, so we cannot blame it on the year. So,
Witness, there you go. I thought of one.
I like that there's a conveniently placed bed of spikes at the end. Like, oh, good. There's that bed of spikes right there. That works out.
Oh,
the
God.
Bit where they show the bed of spikes, show him fall out of the barn, you're like, oh, good, he fell onto the spikes. But then it's like, nope, he's just hanging on the edge of the hayloft. That, like, I'll give the movie 1 point.
I gave the movie 10 points for Dudley from Different Strokes coming to save the day twice, actually, with the little haymaker or whatever the fuck farm tool he was driving. He drove into Jason, and then at the end,
my gosh,
he ends up saving Pam or whoever.
Right, when he drives a bulldozer into fake Jason. Yes, that is, I'm not going to give it 10 points for that, but that was a good moment. Also, wait, that kid's from Different Strokes, did you say?
Yes, he was Arnold's best friend on Different Strokes. And I think most people would probably, like, the only Different Strokes episode anybody ever remembers is the one where Arnold and Dudley come across a child molester. But he was in that one. So,
okay, yes. I've never seen that one, but I am familiar with it.
Right.
And its place in pop culture.
Exactly.
And I am glad that somewhat charming child actor has a better...
He had a real job. Place. Yeah.
Yeah.
He had a real job. I don't know what happened to him after Different Strokes in this, but
I'm really glad this is not his only contribution to our culture.
Exactly.
This is Reggie.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I apparently most of the cast signed on not knowing they were doing Friday the 13th Part 5. Like, what? All of these had a working title to hide it, because by this point people would just like show up and try to see Jason. The only delightful things about this movie is that whoever was under the Jason costume in this movie tried to avoid the cast, you know, to just maintain the mystique of not Jason. And at one point just wandered into you know, the woods nearby to kill some time, and just happened upon two really stoned hippies who lost their shit and ran away. Yeah. That makes me happy.
Yes.
But a lot of the cast didn't know, because it was under some amount of secrecy, they signed on to the project under the working title and auditioned under the working title, and no one mentioned it. And the guy who played Tommy, like, shadowed at a psychiatric hospital for a few weeks to do his research and get... And he was reportedly devastated when they were like, so this movie's Friday the 13th, part 5. And he was just like, are you... Fine.
All that research for nothing. He thought he was doing something serious and meaningful.
Poor baby. The only really good movie is the original. The good Jason movies are 3 and 4. 4 is a lot of fun. 4 is the one where there's no final girl. It's victim that makes it to the end is Corey Feldman being his young, charming self. It has the best crop of, you know, kids getting murdered, but one by one. It is at least adjacent to the camp. Crispin Glover is in it, and he's really funny.
Ooh.
That's the one to watch. And Robin, I hope you do someday to redeem this experience. But if you never do, I would not blame you.
Okay.
It's fine.
Well, let's rate it. I have a feeling that my terrible score will still be higher than everyone else. I gave it a 23. Good try, seasonal fun, 23.
Way to go.
Camila?
As I said, I gave it the 10 points for Dudley. 3.
So before that, you were at a -7?
Yes. Yes, sir.
I thought Robin was going to be the lowest. I don't think that's the case anymore. Robin?
11.
Yeah.
But the thing you said earlier, Sean, about, like, you don't hate this movie, like, this movie's incredibly bad, but it's not like it didn't make me feel as disgusted and unpleasant as a bunch of other movies I've seen. So I do not hate this movie. I pity it.
That is a great point. Aw.
It's like, you showed up and you had some ideas. They did not work, but thank you. And we'll try something different next year. Well, what do you got for part 6? Got a part 6 I do not remember.
It's like a participation award.
Part 7 was the second time they were like, okay, the new main character. This is what keeps happening. They keep saying, all right, now the series is about blank. In part 2, they were like, it's not going to be about, okay, here's our new set of characters. Nope. It's about Tommy Jarvis. Nope. In part 7, they introduced a psychic girl who can fight Jason with her mind.
Oh, God.
And it was like, it's about her now. And then she refused to come back. So, nope. This just keeps happening again and again. I don't know what my point was there. I was just buying time to calculate like a final score.
It was also reasoning to us to justify the pity, or just kind of give it, like, the whole series, not just this one, deserves your pity. The whole series, apparently.
Yes! No, they're doing fine. Again, this made 10 times its budget. That's like a Marvel movie making $1.5 billion. This is a runaway success.
But you know what? Because it's the other four did the heavy lifting for them. That's what happens with a lot of these. We all get sucked back into some bullshit and seeing it in the theater opening night because we're excited.
The final score is a 12. 12 and a third. Thanks to Camila's epic tanking. That 3 is the lowest score that has been offered for any movie on the podcast to date. This is now the third worst movie in our history. This is only better than the 2 Transformers movies.
Just so I'm clear, are we allowed to give negative? If that were to ever come up again, are we allowed to give negative?
I don't think so, but I think that a 0 is possible. I don't know.
Yeah, it can be 0 to 100. It's not 1 to 100. Go to the 0.
Okay.
If the film is complete, it's probably above a 0. Look, some people say it's cheap to just put a bunch of nudity and gore into your film, but Camila didn't see any of the nudity and gore, and look what happened. So...
Yes, I'm absolutely positive that the lack of the 6 boobs that I was what tanked my score of this film.
2 of them were very good.
And I'm sure those ladies had lovely breastises. I highly doubt it would have moved my meter, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, there was a slight spoiler during Robin's recap for the bingo card. This movie has a fist fight.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
That's a bingo for me as well. I don't think we're crossing anything else off, unless the production of this film can be termed a natural disaster.
Hey-o.
I think this means that at some point you and I have to pick a movie together.
Oh.
That makes sense.
I kind of like that idea.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do that.
We'll figure out some means by which we'll do it, like a draft or something. You know, we'll do it on the show in some way. We'll come up with some gimmick by which Robin and I settle on a movie that we have to watch.
What if we both pick two and then we do like a viewer's choice poll?
Ooh.
Yeah, that sounds good. Let the people in on this.
Let the people decide. 'Tis the season.
You're welcome, everyone. You just got to listen to us figure out our ever-changing podcast rules.
Right. A lot of them were drawn up not thinking we would do 52 episodes in a year. But hey, then
that's true.
Right.
Pandemic, everything changed.
Speaking of ever-shifting podcast rules, we have another trivia occurring.
That's right.
Yes.
On October 27th.
So yeah, we're doing another trivia night, virtual horror movie trivia on the October 27th. It's going to happen at 8 p.m. If you've joined us in the past, then you know it's like the same way. It's going to be via Zoom. You just sign up. You can do teams if you want, blah, blah, blah. We're only going to cover the horror films that we have already covered. So that includes Halloween 2, Aliens, Child's Play, 1988 version, Stigmata, Underworld Evolution, Halloween 2007 version, The Nun, Witches of Eastwick, yeah, goes on mm-hmm. there, as well as today, Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning. And the prize for this one is you get to be a guest host on the podcast and choose the movie that we want to review. So yep.
Normally that's reserved for making large donations to Arcade Comedy Theater, but we decided, hey, we have so much fun when we have guests, so let's keep doing it.
So we like to keep it small, so we're only allowing 10 folks to sign up, so make sure you go ahead and do that quickly and sign up. October 27th is the date, 8 p.m. It usually takes like a couple hours. The link to the sign up is on our Twitter. We will just send it out again, and you can also just go to Eventbrite and look up the number one movie in America podcast, and you will find it there.
My trivia question for Underworld Evolution is going to be, hey, what the hell's Underworld Evolution again? If you can answer that question, you get a point. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. What are we watching in this era of streaming releases? It's a weird time. Anybody seen anything?
No, I just spent the better portion of my week binge watching Tamar Braxton's new reality show.
And
I'm sorry.
How was that?
I know you're saying words, but I don't understand what these words are.
Okay, I was like, is Tamar Braxton who I think it is?
Yes.
Why does she have a reality show?
Oh, girl, you don't even know. Like the whole Braxton, all the Braxton sisters, they had an entire like 5 seasons, I think, of a reality show called The Braxton Family Values, where we followed all their life. And Miss Tamar, she's the most vivacious of all of them. She's the most gifable, most quotable one.
I sort of knew that existed because I've seen gifs of her.
Right. Yes.
Right. But I think I really, really believed in my heart that was like Toni Braxton had like a one-off VH1 special with her family. It's 5 seasons.
At least. It might be a couple more. And there's a new season starting on November 5th. This is all on WE TV. And also Tamar had another reality show with her husband for like 2 seasons, I think. And she's also been like a host on a bunch of like talk shows and other things like that. But this one is because it's like, actually it was just a docuseries, just like 6 episodes. And she did this because she quote unquote lost everything when she divorced her husband, and like she've had a fallout with her sisters and money and career and blah blah blah. And I mean, if you like that sort of thing, it's totally fine to go ahead and watch it, but I was not like I would highly recommend, yes, do your research, go look and see who Tamar Braxton is and go watch these six part docuseries immediately. No, it served its purpose for what I needed it for at that moment.
Okay. Yeah. So like I have found, you know, in this horrible time to be alive, I'm finding it harder and harder to not watch things that I've already seen.
Right.
You know, it's like I want all my viewing to be comfort viewing,
right,
in some way. And I feel like a reality show, even if it's new content, it's kind of like things you've already seen.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So, Robin, yeah. How about you?
I actually, even though I just said that, I did watch a couple new things this week. I watched the trial of the Chicago 7. It's fine.
Yeah. You know? It's like that was Sean's review last week. Yeah.
Like, it's half an hour too long and it takes a long time to get going, which is almost exactly the same review I had for Molly's Game. So Sorkin, tighten the screws. And I watched Hubie Halloween because my friend Maddie Francis entered a bet with his roommate Drew to have to watch Hubie Halloween 31 times within the month of October 2020. I think there's $100 on the line.
Heavens to Murgatroyd.
He's doing it. I joined him for viewing 15. Oh my God. And you know what? I think that I obviously was coming into it a little warm because this is such a ridiculous situation. It was also my first experience with Watch with Friends, mm-hmm. the thing that helps you sync up your Netflix viewing so right. you can talk to your buddies while you're watching something, which is kind of cool.
So is he watching each one like 31 times with a different person as proof?
No, I think this is honor system. He's tweeting about it.
So. Oh, okay.
but, you know, like... It's fine. I liked it more than I liked the trial of Chicago 7.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if I liked it. It's not a better movie. I had more fun watching it.
I mean, I want to dismiss all of the Sandler Netflix movies kind of out of hand because, obviously, the one that I watched wasn't terrible. The one with Jennifer Aniston,
murder mystery.
I like that one.
Yeah, that was fine. So I can believe this is fine if he managed to keep the Rob Schneider of it all to a minimum.
He did.
Good.
And then the other thing I watched the West Wing special. I had a very Sorkin weekend. Mm. And it's also fine. But I did want to acknowledge that at the top of the show, Bradley Whitford addresses the camera and gives the most sanctimonious, obnoxious speech I have ever heard. And I'm gonna die mad about it. Basically, he's like, you might be asking why we're doing this in such a hard time. And if you wanted to fix the world by putting the 10 smartest people out there in front of a camera and have them tell you how to fix the world, hey, go ahead and do it. But we don't have that. So we're just going to put on a little play for y'all because that's the platform we have. And then he also, because John Spencer died, they recast Leo, the chief of staff, with Sterling K. Brown. And Sterling K. Brown's an amazing actor, and I like looking at his face, but he is not appropriate for that role of a guy who's supposed to be a lifelong friend of the president who is canonically in his 60s. Oh, and it just didn't make sense. And like, I was thinking about it, and I figured out, I was like, you know who they should have cast? Clark Peters, the guy who played Lester on The Wire. If they wanted to have, if they wanted to cast a black actor, because there's so few black characters on the show, and wanted someone with the gravitas to pull off the character of Leo McGarry, that's who they should have got. But instead, they got Sterling K. Brown because they were like, who is the one black actor we're familiar with?
Right, right.
And they say, or Bradley Whitford says in this obnoxious thing, he's like, Sterling K. Brown, you may know him from a little television program called The Emmys.
Wow, okay.
So it's like they can't even acknowledge him for the work that he actually does.
Right.
They're acknowledging him for his existing acknowledgement for it, which is just gross. Wow. And Aaron Sorkin bothers me. And yet I gave him 3.5 hours of my weekend.
Sorry for your loss.
Why do I do this to myself?
Hey, we could be coming up on the most interesting Oscars death race ever. And that will be a time to ask yourself that question again. It is kind of that point in the pandemic where it's like, I've crossed the 300th movie I've watched this year. Not all of them are actually penetrating my brain. But the number one movie in America is Honest Thief with Liam Neeson.
What?
This is the second weekend in a row.
Existing without me knowing. Is this what happens when you don't go to the movies and don't watch trailers?
Yes, it is. This week's, that's a thing. And it's the number one movie in America is generically Liam Neeson action movie number 42. Nice. It's he's a thief that's trying to go straight and he tries to do the right thing and it doesn't go all that well for him, but then it all works out. Here's the thing. It is completely unremarkable. And in that, it was so nice in the year 2020 to I went to the drive-in. If you go to the movies, absolutely go to the drive-in, to drive out there and watch Liam Neeson have a problem, like all the problems he's had before, and to know, 90 minutes from now, he's going to work this out. Let's see how he gets there. And just think about nothing.
Right.
Boy, was that a perfectly acceptable way to spend a couple of hours.
It's your equivalent of watching a new Braxton reality show.
Yes, clearly.
And it came on, it was the front half of a double feature before Scream. And man, if you told me I had to watch something 31 times in a month, if it was Scream, I might actually enjoy myself.
Oh, totally.
I love that movie.
Me too. I would totally do that.
It's, I wonder if I'm ever going to get to the point where it's like, I've seen this 15 times. I'm not engaged anymore. Nope. It's perfect every time. I love it so much. And I bring this up. This is for very few people. The Japanese horror movie House from 1977. I had the vaguest awareness that this was a really weird horror movie. This is the only time in my life I have watched something on streaming and as soon as the movie ended, ordered the Blu-ray so I could watch it again and know more things about it and see a slightly better version of it. Wow. It's basically just a bunch of girls go to a haunted house and then weird things start happening. But the specific nature of those weird things, like a piano slowly eating a lady or a beheaded Japanese girl's head springing out of a well and then biting another girl on the butt. Like, it's so wacky and like goes into these psychedelic sequences with weird rainbow colored cartoons in the background, and it is just so off the wall and apparently is one long metaphor for the devastation of the atomic bomb while being over the top weird and goofy at all points.
I've actually kind of seen that movie. It was on at a bar that I was at,
so you get the gist.
I get it. Yeah,
I loved it so much that I the Criterion edition is supposed to be arriving today and I am going to dive in. it instantly became, I am all about this movie and I want a t-shirt.
Camille, have you seen it?
No, actually I kind of stay away from Japanese and Korean horror. They scare the bejesus out of me.
Fair enough.
Those things really fuck with me psychedelically. So I just kind of keep away.
Huh. I am fascinated by the parameters of your horror movie loving. Because you love horror movies.
But there's a point. There's absolutely a line that I do not cross. And it's just some real freaky imagery. The few Japanese and or Korean films that I have seen, it's just always some real fucked up shit. And it's like, mm-hmm. You know, not even, and even the ones that's not even like a horror movie, like Old Boy. Come on, son.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I was not prepared when I saw that movie.
No. Oh, God. Amazing film, but damn.
And that's just content maintained in the remake. Hey, remember, they remade that one for America, and it's like, who did you think that was for?
But didn't Spike Lee direct it?
I was just going to say that.
It was like Josh Brolin.
That's right.
What, Josh Brolin was the bad guy?
No, Josh Brolin and Samuel L. Jackson and Elizabeth Olsen.
Yeah, or was he the old boy? Was Josh Brolin the old boy?
I think he was
Josh Brolin was the old boy.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who thought. That's a good... You know what America needs? This story retold.
Really? It's sad because that movie has an extensive Elizabeth Olsen nude scene that I can't enjoy because of the context. Like, I don't want... I don't even...
Ugh. What a shame. What a waste.
Selfish Spike Lee. How dare you?
Anyway, House is great. Let's draw a movie. We are back to the general pool with all the movies in it. The number is 265. That is Chronicle. What's Chronicle?
Of Riddick?
It's the found footage I Have Superpowers movie.
Yeah, from 2012. This silence is our reaction to drawing Chronicle.
I have no knowledge of this film whatsoever. Oh, Michael B. Jordan. Okay, I'm in.
Okay. I agree.
I won't play the veto. I'll give that to you. I was going to say, like, you know, the year is going to end. We're doing at least two episodes of a chosen film. At some point, I've got to play it just for the hell of it. But right. Nah, It could get worse. It can get so much worse.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Chronicle. Yeah. I'm happy. It's a found footage superhero movie. Why the hell not? Friday the 13th, A New Beginning was released March 22nd of 1985. What was the number one song in America when not Jason at all slashed his way back into cinemas?
Madonna.
No.
We Are the World.
No, a little early for that, I think.
Prince?
No, not Prince. We are looking for a band.
ABC.
Now we're looking for a band that I guess qualifies as hair metal, but that's generous. Really, it's more like adult contemporary.
Rolling
White
Stones?
Snake?
Water White Snake down a little bit, and you land on this band.
Guns and Roses? Were they out then?
Not necessarily, no. No, this is not a one-hit wonder. This is definitely a band that had some hits, but you'd be hard-pressed to name two of them at the same time. Like, I don't know. How can I hint at this? It's hard to hint at the name, because the name is just a combination of letters and words.
Def Leppard.
Combination of letters and words.
I have so much more respect for Def Leppard than that. I don't think I can lead you there. So, the answer is REO Speedwagon with Can't Fight This Feeling.
Oh, come on! They're off! Yeah! What? Show some respect.
To REO Speedwagon?
REO Speedwagon is a good band. I will die on that hill.
Okay. All right. Let me go die on the hill. What are the other REO Speedwagon songs?
There's the Roll with the Changes song, which has been featured in multiple films in wonderful scenes. I think that Cabin in the Woods use of that song is like probably top 10 uses of a song ever. I think They Can't Fight This Feeling Anymore is also pretty good. The one about, like, I heard that you've been cheating on me is also great.
Do they have any songs that actually rock, or is everything they do just a low mid-tempo ballad about feelings? And doesn't that pause say it all?
I don't think that their lack of rocking makes them not good, and I think that it's unfair to call them watered down Whitesnake.
All I'm saying is you could line up them and every band next to them on adjacent stages. You could say, I'm taking you into a vast field, and on one stage is Foreigner, and on another stage is Styx, and then there's Def Leppard, and over here is Rat.
And I'm going with REO.
And I'm getting to the REO Speedwagon stage last. I might go look at Night Ranger first.
I wouldn't come to that.
Number one.